Before we begin today's show, I have some important news to share with you. Premier Insight's financial year ends on June the 30th, and it's vital we close a final funding gap of $94,000 by that date. The great news is generous friends of the ministry have offered a new $5,000 matching grant, which will double your gift today up to that amount. That's why I wanted to take just a moment before we get into today's podcast to ask for your help. If you would, please take a moment today to give your best gift at premierinsight.org/CS Lewis. That's premierinsight.org/CS Lewis. Thank you for understanding how important your gift is today and for giving generously. And now it's time for today's podcast.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Thank you for listening to the show that brings you the thought and theology of C.S. Lewis with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, resources and podcasts. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. But now for today's show.
I am very excited to be joined today by Dr. Crystal Hurd, an educator, poet and researcher from Virginia. She's contributed a chapter on Flora Lewis, C.S. Lewis's mum, in the book Women and C.S. Lewis. And she's written her own book, The Leadership of C.S. Lewis, 10 Traits to Encourage Change and Growth. We're going to be talking about Crystal's work on various aspects of C.S. Lewis's life, as well as sharing a paper that was presented on her behalf at the 2024 Undiscovered C.S. Lewis Conference, which was held at George Fox University. The title of Crystal's paper there was How Paternal Literary Habits Influenced C.S. Lewis. What you are about to hear is Crystal's paper from the 2024 Undiscovered C.S. Lewis Conference, which was held at George Fox University. Very sadly, Crystal wasn't able to share the paper herself as she had to leave the conference early, but the wonderful William O'Flaherty, who runs EssentialCSLewis.com and is the host of the All About Jack podcast, read her paper for her. The title of Crystal's paper was How Paternal Literary Habits Influenced C.S. Lewis.
Yes, paternal literary habits, how they influence C.S. Lewis. In a publication, now lost to time, there is an illustration of Belfast Police Court Solicitor Albert James Lewis. He stands proudly behind a court table, poised to deliver a rebuttal to his in his freshly pressed suit, pocket knife, and watch chain. In his hand and spread before him are papers of significance to his defense. The cartoon reads, "Well-known, favorable, and otherwise to patrons of the police courts, the otherwise section is generally to be found in the dock, though sometimes they may be seen in the witness box, cowering under a withering cross-examination. Apart from his duties as a prosecuting solicitor, has a very exciting practice thanks to the reputation he enjoys in his commanding abilities as an advocate. Conceals a kindly hearted behind a somewhat stern exterior. Principal recreations, devouring literature and walking. Is an eloquent and forceful public speaker and keen in debate. A good man to have on your side, an opponent to be feared if your cause is weak. Of note is the observation that among the flatteries of his rhetorical powers, Albert's recreations includes devouring literature. In another publication, G.A. Lemon draws Albert with a book of English literature tucked under his right arm. For a man of forceful persuasion, he was also of thoughtful reflection, a man who relied on his unwavering empathy and relentless tongue as an advocate for the poor and disenfranchised of his community. Much of his empathy came through personal experience, but he also developed a perspective through which his wide reading of both classical and literature contemporary fiction. The Lewis family papers, which include 11 volumes of personal history of the Lewis and Hamilton families, illustrate various references to Shakespeare and the Bible with wisdom inspired by his favorite book, a collection of essays by Thomas Babington Macaulay from the Edinburgh Review. Albert Lewis was a well-read man whose ambitions for a career in literature were cut short due to a financial strain. Albert hailed from a long line of working-class citizens. His father, Richard, was a reader and a blue-collar boilermaker, a shipmaker who might be glimpsed in tales such as The Voyage of the Dawn Treader. Both men had an extremely extremely influential on the youngest Lewis son, whose time penning fantasies in a draft attic birthed imaginative worlds that are still enchanting audiences today. Dozens of biographies have discussed C.S. Lewis's contentious relationship with his father, Albert. Albert was an aspiring politician in his early years, and his famous performance in the courtroom earned him prestige and respect among his city colleagues. Yet, as he is described in Surprised by Joy, C.S. Lewis struggled for many years to connect with his father. This disconnect originates with what his brother Warren predicted as mid-Victorian tendencies. The youngest Lewis often complained of his father's unwavering soliloquies delivered long after he had exited the courtroom. His insistence on eating a hot meal at 2:30 in the afternoon, or his strong distaste for open windows, no matter how stuffy little Lee became. Years after Albert's death, C.S. Lewis regretted the poor treatment of his father. In fact, he had owed Albert much. It was his literary father who packed the house with books too deep on the shelves. That is mentioned in the preface of his inaugural work of scholarship, The Allegory of Love. Quote, "The greatest of these debts, that which I owe to my father for the inestimable benefit of a childhood passed mostly alone in house full of books, is beyond repayment." Additionally, it was Albert's talk of local politics that influences C.S. Lewis's very first work of fiction, Boxen, featuring the unforgettable frog, Lord Big. Albert was certainly a complicated man, but he was also in many ways misunderstood. His early experiences with struggling finances taught him to be shrewd with his money, while in some cases he could be extravagantly generous. His son often castigated him for his poor judgment in financial decisions, but Albert did not grow up in financial luxury. His early life was characterized with ambition and promise, but it was a dream cut short when his father could no longer finance his education at Lurgan. Faced with premature end of his education, Albert began apprenticing with a local solicitor, and when he took exams, passed with exemplary scores. Albert soon launched a career as a court solicitor, driven not by his previous ambition to enter politics, but to honor the hard work of his ancestors, offering assistance to his working-class clients, who often could not afford quality representation. Albert was not only a good lawyer, he was exceptional at his job. Albert felt it was both his civic and Christian duty to offer his services to those who need it and deserved it most. Albert certainly carried his religious conviction, influenced by his most significant book of all, into the courtroom. As Warren reflects in the family papers, in a profession singularly adapted to these dishonest practices which lie within the limits of the law, he preserved throughout his life a high and scrupulous standard of honor. I have heard his managing clerk relate that not one but many times he had seen Albert throw open the door of the inner office and hustle out a would-be client with the words, "In fact, you want to make use of my legal knowledge to help you commit a swindle. Get out of this." This managing clerk, an older man named James Conlin, worked in Albert's office for several years. Conlin often left Albert in a lurch when he wouldn't appear at work to take care of his ailing wife. Albert already had considerable stress working with a heavy caseload, yet he insisted that Colin kindly be paid his typical wages every week. When Colin attempted to return the checks, Albert refused. In a letter dated September 25th, 1934, Colin reminds C.S. Lewis that this date is the solemn anniversary of his father's death. The letter, quoting, "I am going up to the cemetery and shall put flowers on a plot. I miss your father very much." Although Albert enjoyed a long and successful tenure as a solicitor, his original ambition was a career in literature. Albert read voraciously as a young man, despite his financial burden. Richard attempted to nurture Albert's talents. Albert was a precocious young man whose talents far surpassed those necessary for a working man's destiny. At 18, Albert joined the Belmont Literary Society and read papers on various political topics. In a bit of foreshadowing, this society, which featured papers followed by formal rebuttals, functioned similarly to the Oxford Socratic Club. Of those that have survived, these articulate speeches are sprinkled with various literary and historical references. One audience member remarked that Albert's participation in the literary society improved his matrimonial aspects by 20%. Even at this early age, Albert illustrated his sharp mind, rhetorical prowess, and impressive knowledge of history. There is no doubt that Albert acquired this knowledge through a wide range of books and periodicals. Albert's literary influences, like his son's, are vast and varied. Albert often quoted the Bible and Shakespeare. In his letters and family papers, there are references to Leo Tolstoy and William Makepeace Thackeray, among many others. Surprised by Joy often mentions Albert enjoyed the political novels of Anthony Trollope, Charles Dickens, W.W. Jacobs. Although Flora his wife did not like poetry, Albert adored some works by Alfred Lord Tennyson. Samuel Taylor Coleridge was present in the home library, but C.S. Lewis states it was never opened. Additionally, there are many references to leaders both past and present, local and national. Of particular interest in Albert's early fascination was with writer and critic John Ruskin. In a letter to his then potential wife, Flora Hamilton, Albert sends along a copy of Ruskin's A Joy Forever and exclaim, quote, "9 years ago, I heard these passages repeated in a student's room at Trinity. It is one of the strangest things in nature that a face, a voice, a few words, without effort, and sometimes against effort, become part of us for life." Their connection developed after Albert extolled her only publication, a now-lost short story entitled The Princess Rosetta. Soon after that, the two exchanged book recommendations, and a romance blossomed among their mutual love of reading. What a love story.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
We're going to take a quick break now, but if you are enjoying today's show, please do consider rating it and leaving a review on your podcast platform so that other people can discover it too.
I just wanted to quickly remind you that Premier Insight has been offered a new $5,000 matching grant that will double your gift today up to that amount. And right now, that's an incredible blessing, as there is a final funding gap of $94,000 that must be closed before the end of our financial year on June the 30th. This show depends fully on the generosity of friends like you. So I'm asking you to please give your very best gift right now to close this gap, knowing your gift will be doubled. You can give now at premierinsight.org/CS Lewis. premierinsight.org/CS Lewis. Thank you.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Welcome back to the show. We would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Do get in touch on social media at Premier Unbelievable. Now let's return to the conversation.
In an appendix to the family papers, Lewis recalls a few of Albert's books which inspired his style. Of earliest note is Captain Marryat, Rattle the Reefer, and Mr. Midshipman's Easy, Jacob's Faithful, and The Dog Fiend. Although Albert never expressed particular interest in John Milton, his 1879 Lurgan copy of Milton's shorter poems is heavily annotated and, quote, would be rash to dismiss as a mere schoolbook. Without question, the most influential of Lewis's adult life is Thomas Babington Macaulay's critical and historical essays, contributed to the Edinburgh Review, gifted from his father on Christmas of 1879. Macaulay was a British poet and politician who served as Secretary of War and Paymaster General in the 19th century. Albert's heavy and varied annotations of this book demonstrated that he enjoyed multiple readings of the text for the rest of his life. The book is now housed at the Waite Center at Wheaton College in Illinois. Among Albert's annotated essays were Mr. Robert Montgomery's poems, Horace Walpole, and Gladstone on Church and the State. Warren observed that the essays that Albert most frequently used in both reference and conversation were the essays of Boswell and Warren Hastings of his well-loved collection, Warren Postulates. In Macaulay's, he found a writer whose obvious charm of style he set himself to make his own, not without success, as evidenced by papers read in the Belmont Literary Society. But in addition to the fascination of style, Albert found in Macaulay's an affinity with his own possession of thought, an affinity which waxed instead of waned over the years. Additionally, Albert owned a copy of Trevelyan's Macaulay's Life and Letters. Albert's own work also reflects the breadth of his readings. His short story, The Story of Half Sovereign, published in volume 14 of Zainzuk, the C.S. Lewis Journal, reminds readers of Dickensian writing style. Additionally, his unpublished short story, Put a Penny in the Slot, begins with the line, quote, a man is a hero to his valet, so no man's profession is romantic to his own eyes. This line may sound familiar to the first line in Dickens' semi-autobiographical David Copperfield. In continuing his narrative, Albert writes, the barrister looks with envy at the career of the successful novelist and contrasts the drudgery of his own calling with the delightful pastime by which his fortunate friend of letters earns fame and wealth. On the other hand, the successful novelist, as he sits in his late breakfast, putting off the evil hour for returning to his study chair and his pile of manuscripts, reads in his morning paper a great speech by his college chum, delivered in the court of causes of the preceding day. Then it is his turn to slight and envy as he thinks of his rejected addresses and the numberless times when galling words declined with thanks have been the reward of his labors. End of quote there. Unfortunately, Put a Penny in the Slot is preceded in the family papers by a firm rejection by the British weekly publication Tidbits. Despite these setbacks, Albert immensely enjoyed reading for pleasure. In his diary, he contemplates returning to a literary hobby if he retired at 52, yet public duty ceaselessly called to Albert's conscience. Although he wrote short fiction and poetry in his life, he never published his work. Yet Albert felt that part of his literary legacy was supporting his brilliant sons. The little inn room at the Little Lee was essentially Albert's prized library. He ensured that his boys would have access to all good literature and perhaps select a career in letters. Albert was immensely proud of his youngest son's academic and literary accomplishments. However, most of the work C.S. Lewis composed during Albert's lifetime was secular in nature. It wasn't until Albert's death that C.S. Lewis would experience a spiritual awakening, one that would lead to some of the most meaningful religious writings of the 20th century. Most may recognize Albert Lewis's or Albert's father, Richard, as the man who carved C.S. Lewis's famous wooden wardrobe now housed at the Mary Need Wade Center at Wheaton College. After Albert's death in 1929, the wardrobe found a new home at the Kilns, the Oxford home of Warren and Clive Staples. The impressive woodwork is a testimony of Richard's talents as a carpenter, but his occupation was a boilermaker. He hailed from a long line of working-class farmers, preachers, and skilled laborers. While Richard was a craftsman by trade, he also loved to read. The family papers contain a fragment of a fascinating story he wrote for his children, featuring the character of Timothy Tumbledown. This, however, was not his only literary contribution. While employed in Cook, he established the Cook Steamship Company's Workmen's Library and Reading Room. Workers gathered frequently and read papers about a variety of topics. Not surprisingly, Richard's papers were often revolved around religious themes. The primary purpose of the reading room was to transfer workers into educated citizens. Richard felt that the working class had a valued voice in shaping culture and society. The reading room allowed men to collectively discuss important issues while informing them of local and global events. In the family papers, Warren recalls when Richard came to live at Little Lee in 1907. Because of time, I'm not going to be able to read that quote. Richard moved out shortly before Flora's death, when her illness became too much for the household to bear. However, Richard succumbed to old age in February of 1908, just 6 months before Flora's death of abdominal cancer. Likewise, his son and grandson, Richard's speeches were often spiritual in nature, utilized literary references such as Robert Burns, and perhaps examples for clarity of understanding. A few of Richard's speeches remain. One of particular, which reminds the reader of Mere Christianity, is entitled An Essay of Special Providence from November of 1858. I will read part of that quote. Many look upon God as a great and highly exalted being who sustains the earth in orbit, guides the stars in their courses, and commands the season as they appear at their appointed times. Yet would go as far as to admit that he orders the destiny of states and of empires, but cannot conceive that he superintends their individual concerns and takes the deepest interest in their present and eternal welfare. The quote goes on, which I won't have time. The concluding paragraph as follows. As evidenced by reading preferences of Albert and Richard Lewis, reading can greatly enhance the quality of our lives, no matter the profession. Richard built vessels that carried people across wide oceans. Albert restored hope by defending oppressed individuals in bright, intimidating courtrooms. Both men loved to read and bequeath their passion to their children. Story is the infinite fountain which satisfies all with a thirsty imagination. When exploring the Lewis ancestry, we find generations of storytellers bewitched by worlds assembled paragraph by paragraph that captivated minds long after the final page. This imaginative architect was present decades before a young boy of Belfast wrote of aristocratic frogs and later about four curious children and a majestic lion. Thank you.
That was Dr. Crystal Hurd's How Paternal Literary Habits Influence C.S. Lewis, which was given at the 2024 Undiscovered C.S. Lewis Conference held at George Fox University. Crystal, now that we've heard your paper, not read by you, sadly, but read by the wonderful William, are there any final helpful clarifications that you would like to share?
I just hope that a lot of people understand that Lewis was not this exclusive bloom. He was sort of part of this garden of all these great writers and thinkers. He was raised like that. You know, I've heard people say, gosh, he's so brilliant. You know, how amazing to be this small kid and be so brilliant. He was raised by brilliant people. He was surrounded by brilliant people. And even if they weren't, you know, educated at Oxford, they were working class. They were local heroes. You know, they were writers and believers. And just literally almost like a Shakespearean play of all these crazy, awesome personalities, you know, it's incredible, the just the mix of personalities and all these people kind of came together to create the story of Lewis's own life. And I think later on he took that influence and wrote stories.
Crystal, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you today about so many different aspects of Lewis's work. But where can we go to find out more about you, about some of the work that you're doing on this really interesting topic?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so I'm currently working on a book called Bookish Clever People, about the influence of the Lewis and Hamilton families. Unfortunately, I don't have very much on the Hamilton families because Mary burned a lot of the family diaries. So I don't have a lot. I just have what was been collected. But again, it's just fascinating. When you go into Lewis's work, there's actually a lot of family influences, tiny things here and there, little nuggets that are dropped here and there. Easter eggs, I guess some people call them, where the family has provided some influence in how things were written. So yeah, I'm working on that. You mentioned earlier that I have a chapter in the Women in Lewis book. Mm-hmm. I have my book, Leadership of C.S. Lewis, and also wrote a women's devotional back in, I think, 2014. So that's available on Amazon US. And yeah, so I just finished up a chapter for the Routledge Companion to C.S. Lewis on the family influences.
Nice.
That should be out, I think, in 2026. So yeah, I've got a lot of balls I'm juggling, and also have a brand new YouTube channel I've started under That Lewis Lady. I talk about Lewis and also just like book theme too, because yeah, I love to read too, and I love poetry and fiction and all that stuff. So I talk about those things, but also talk about my most recent video was about allegory, how Narnia isn't an allegory, and how that qualification works. And so, yeah, it's been fun just talking about C.S. Lewis and being on the internet and just discussing, you know, different aspects of his works and just widening the appreciation of Lewis' works and keeping him. Yeah, you know, the Netflix series is getting ready to start recording. And so there's a lot of buzz about that now. And putting Narnia sort of back into the culture again. So it's exciting. It's an exciting time.
Brilliant. Well, if you've got all of those links, Crystal, I will make sure that they are in the show notes so people can just click on them rather than trying to find it themselves. But
sure. Yeah.
Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you today.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much, Ruth. I know you're wore out. It's like 11 o'clock there.
This is not the latest interview I've done. Good old time difference. Thank you for listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast with me, Ruth Jackson. Many of the topics that we've touched on today are discussed in greater detail on earlier episodes of the programme. Check out our archive of past shows at premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, videos, and podcasts. Plus, if you register on our website or sign up for our newsletter there, then you will get exclusive access to new content, free resources, and more. That's premierunbelievable.com. What did you think of today's show? Are there any topics or works of C.S. Lewis that you would like us to explore next? We would love to hear from you. Send us an email, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Connect with us on X, formerly known as Twitter, @premierunbelievablefe, or drop us a direct message on Instagram or Facebook @premierunbelievable. We have also recently launched on TikTok, so if that's your thing, or you know anyone else who might be interested, then you can find us there @premier.unbelievable. Your feedback and thoughts are so important to us, so please get in touch. If you're enjoying the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it on whatever platform you're listening on, as it helps more people to discover the show. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.
From lashes for days with the Viral Liquid Lash Extensions Mascara to awakening your eyes with lift and color from the Brilliant Eye Brightener, Thrive Cosmetics is the go-to when you want to amplify your everyday look. Plus, every product is 100% vegan, cruelty-free, and made with clean, skin-loving ingredients that work with your skin. And for every product purchased, Thrive Cosmetics donates to help communities thrive. So every time you use your favorite Thrive Cosmetics product, you're helping communities you care about, too. Amplify your everyday. Go to thrivecosmetics.com/shine26 for an exclusive offer of 20% off your first order. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/shine26.